It is the NPR News Update for Monday, June 30, the final day of the month. I'm Phil Picardi with Minnesota's news on your schedule. Today, Minnesota Latinos are often reluctant to use food stamps, and the Minnesota Wild try to build on success. First, a federal emergency management agency official will be in the state this week to verify damage estimates from widespread flooding. Minnesota Homeland Security and Emergency Management Director Chris Idy says damage across the state should easily qualify for federal aid.
We will be surpassing that $7.3 million mark. We are more than double the $7 million mark so far.
And Idy says the impact is widespread.
We have communities that have been cut off from their emergency services. We have communities that have to do a 25-mile detour even to get home. So that impacts on businesses. We have loss of business on main streets across this whole state.
State public safety officials say businesses and individuals should report damage to county emergency management directors. In some cases, funding can be made for businesses to qualify for low-interest loans through the U.S. Small Business Administration, and individuals may be eligible for grants to repair damage to their homes. The city of St. Paul has a plan to save its 4th of July fireworks display. The fireworks were supposed to be part of the Taste of Minnesota Festival, but flooding on Harriet Island forced the festival to relocate to Waconia, 40 miles to the west. The new plan is to center the fireworks display over the state capitol. Mayor Chris Coleman says the new location will change where the best seats for spectators are.
Stay away from the river. It's dangerous. Stay away from the bluffs. You can't see them from there anyways. And so come down, grab a spot by the cathedral or wherever, and take light rail down.
Coleman says Wells Fargo, the Minnesota Wild, and the Visit St. Paul Tourism Bureau will pay for the fireworks display. Minnesota's largest doctors group says the public should leave the fireworks to the professionals. President of the Minnesota Medical Association, Cindy Firkin-Smith, says every summer, emergency rooms across the state and nation see a spike in fireworks-related injuries, such as burns and trauma to hands and faces.
On average, 200 people go to the emergency room every day with fireworks-related injuries in the months surrounding the 4th of July, from mid-June to mid-July. And so this is the appropriate time to really start educating people about those risks.
A recent report by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission says nationwide there were more than 11,000 injuries caused by fireworks last year. That's up more than 30% from the year before. A third of those injuries were caused by sparklers. The report also says half of all fireworks-related injuries treated by ERs were to individuals younger than 20 years old. Rising property values and the other upturns in Minnesota's economy bode well for the finances and credit ratings of the state's municipalities, Martin Moylan reports.
Moody's Investors Service, a major credit rating agency, says several economic trends could boost the already generally solid credit ratings of the state's cities. Those ratings affect borrowing costs. Sue Chun is an assistant vice president with Moody's.
After years of economic challenges, property values are on the rise for the first time since 2007. Building activity has increased, and overall residential property sales are at an increase as well.
Statewide values for residential, commercial, and industrial properties fell between 2007 and 2012. But last year, values for all property categories rose about 7%. Higher values can mean more property tax revenue for cities. Moody's gives Minnesota cities a median rating of AA3. That's above average. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The city of Minneapolis has 2 weeks left to decide whether to support the Southwest Light Rail line that would run to Eden Prairie. Here's Curtis Gilbert.
Every city along the proposed line has until July 14th to vote on the project. Hopkins and Minnetonka have already approved it. St. Louis Park and Hennepin County are scheduled to vote next week. Eden Prairie the week after that. But Minneapolis has yet to even schedule a hearing on the issue. It's been locked in closed-door meetings with the Metropolitan Council for more than a month. The parties are negotiating with the help of a mediator. They've stayed tight-lipped about the status of those talks, or even what's on the table. In April, the Met Council voted to bury the trains in shallow tunnels as they pass between Cedar Lake and Lake of the Isles. That's something the city opposed. Many residents who live in that area want Minneapolis to vote no. A coalition of groups from the city's north side are lobbying for a yes vote. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The number of robberies on and around the University of Minnesota campus was up 28% last year compared to the average the previous four academic years. Alex Friedrich has more.
Last fall, the U and the neighborhood surrounding it saw a spike in crime. That semester, the university community suffered 26 robberies, including four on campus. But then the number of robberies in the area returned to normal for the rest of the year. University spokesman Tim Bussey said the U has seen some increase in robberies over the years, but he says some years have been worse than others.
I don't know if there's a long-term trend that we're seeing here. I don't know that 1 year makes a trend or 1 3-month period makes a trend.
Bussey says university officials will monitor campus this fall and work to prevent another rash of crime. Alex Friedrich, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Most diesel fuel sold in Minnesota will contain double the amount of biodiesel starting tomorrow. Mark Stile reports.
The move is the latest step in Minnesota's push for more renewable fuels. Right now, the state requires a 5% biodiesel blend, but that will rise to 10% on July 1st. Most biodiesel is made from soybeans. Minnesota's trucking industry opposes even the 5% mandate, saying biodiesel costs more and sometimes gels and clogs engines in the winter. But Minnesota Soybean Growers Association President George Goblish says the fuel performs well in his trucks.
I run four semis on the road, and I've never had a stitch of problems.
The 10% requirement continues through September, when the biodiesel mandate will revert back to 5% for the cold weather months. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Worthington.
From time to time, we like to check in with our digital editor, Michael Olson. At mprnews.org, he collects regional stories and puts it up under the banner Minnesota Today. He also edits today's question, and that's where we will begin. Michael, hello. What is today's question?
Today's question looks at the question that the Supreme Court just ruled on today about if employees, public sector employees who benefit from collective bargaining, so they benefit from the work of a union, if they should be compelled to pay their fair share. And the fair share is typically a much more reduced rate than what the full union members pay. So this is a case set in Illinois. And the full union membership would pay something close to $70+ a year, where a fair share member would pay like around $50.
And I'm guessing that's going to be a controversial subject matter, and you're going to have a lot of folks chiming in.
Yeah, and so it's a fascinating deal. This is a huge blow to the SEIU in particular. They've grown significantly in the public sector. They've been organizing in the public sector, and you know what we're seeing here from the comments. I have a comment from Carrie Graff who's saying, if you don't pay the dues, you shouldn't get to benefit from others paying dues.
And Michael, there was a big Supreme Court ruling today about birth control and whether or not under the Obamacare, the new health care law, if private employers need to pay for certain kinds of birth control if they have religious objections.
Corporations essentially have a form of religious freedom where if the leaders of that corporation or that corporation can decide if they have a religious objection to contraception, which is a requirement that employers must provide contraception under the new health law, well, that part has been struck down.
Ah, so we've got the big today's question about the union ruling, and then on Facebook, you can also check out the story about the contraception ruling that was handed down by the Supreme Court this morning.
Right, and there's deep passion on both of these issues, and so we're seeing a lot of debate surrounding them.
You can check it out, all the news, at mprnews.org. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Phil.
Latinos are more likely to live in poverty than whites and have a harder time finding their next meal, but many are reluctant to take advantage of food stamps. Stigma, language, and complex eligibility rules all play into historically low participation rates among Latinos in the nation's largest nutrition program. And community and anti-hunger advocates say one of the biggest barriers is the power of myth. Laura Ewan explains.
Maritza Real has heard it all. Part of her job with the Community Action Partnership of Scott, Carver, and Dakota counties is to help eligible Latino immigrants learn about the food stamp program and help them navigate the applications. But when she tells them about the benefits, the families often respond with skepticism and fear. And it's a very specific fear.
That once their children turn 18, they will have to pay everything that they receive, which is not true. But we've heard it everywhere.
Riel, who grew up speaking Spanish, doesn't know where the rumor started. And yet there are many more like it, preventing others in her community from accessing healthy food. She says she hopes a shared background can help her clients feel at ease.
I let them know, you know, my family's from Mexico. They immigrated here. You know, I know that my parents had fears, too, when they came to the United States.
Some immigrants believe applying for food stamps, formerly known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, will hurt their chances of becoming citizens. You can find some of these families at the Prince of Peace Lutheran Church in Burnsville, where Maritza Real makes fast friends with kids in need.
La ladybug, ¿qué color es? Roja.
Including a three-year-old ponytailed girl with a picture book. The church's expansive food shelf offers people everything from fresh produce to various kinds of bread.
Do you like that one better?
One woman who's come here seeking food and help with medical insurance is Sonia. She asked that her last name not be used in the story because she doesn't have legal permission to be in the country, nor does her husband, who works as a cook in a restaurant, and her two older children. But her youngest child was born in the U.S., and that means, unlike the rest of the family, she may be eligible for SNAP benefits. Still, Sonia is hesitant to apply for the program on her daughter's behalf.
Sometimes you think you're running a risk that if you give so much information, you can have a problem in the future. Some people say you can be deported.
Maritza Real tells parents like Sonia that as long as they're honest on their applications, there is help available for their citizen children and that they shouldn't go hungry. At a nearby table, Real plops a six-month-old boy on her lap so his mother can fill out paperwork. The mom, Mariana, says at first she assumed the SNAP program was off limits to her family because she and her husband lack legal status. She says then she learned that the program was for her children, who were born in the U.S. She also heard from friends who told her that receiving the benefits didn't prevent them from obtaining legal residency. She says those positive stories in the community helped her overcome her fear and led her to apply for SNAP. She says she feels at peace knowing where her three children's next meals will come from. Nearly 8% of the 465,000 people who receive food stamps in Minnesota are Latino, a group that the state acknowledges is underserved. Across the U.S., the Latino advocacy group, the National Council of La Raza, is keen on getting more low-income Latinos to learn about SNAP. Vice President Eric Rodriguez says the divisiveness of the immigration debate may have contributed to the belief that accepting food stamps will hurt one's chances of citizenship.
A lot of the conversation around immigration reform a year ago focused a lot on, well, have you been paying taxes? Well, have you been, you know, doing what you're supposed to do by not becoming a government's charge? In that polarizing debate, there's been a focus on who is deserving and who's not deserving. People are paying attention to that debate very, very carefully. And I think it's raised a lot of sensitivity about, you know, when do I seek assistance when I need it for my family?
According to the USDA, only about half of eligible Latino households are participating in SNAP. Rodriguez says the gap is troubling, especially given that the data show Latinos are more likely than whites to be hungry or at risk of hunger. Latino children are also more likely to be obese and overweight. It's a paradox, he says, that makes access to nutritious food all the more important. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News, Burnsville.
A nearly 400-foot-tall crane will be part of the Minneapolis skyline for a year. Parts of that crane are expected to begin arriving from Pennsylvania and the Vikings Stadium site today. The crane will be able to lift about 3 million pounds. St. Paul-based Flagstone Foods is being purchased by Chicago-based Treehouse Foods for $860 million. Flagstone makes private label snacks and has a facility in Minneapolis. A state pollution official says the torrential downpours this month have washed nearly a year's worth of sediment into the Minnesota River and its tributaries. The high-intensity rain led to excess stormwater flowing into the river, Pat Baskfield coordinates a statewide river monitoring program for the MPCA. He says levels are as much as 10 times the proposed pollution limit. Baskfield says the rainwater washed phosphorus and other fertilizers from farms into the river. A 17-year-old Minneapolis boy escaped serious injury after a fall at the Mall of America over the weekend. Bloomington police say the boy was doing a handstand on a second-floor railing when he lost his balance and fell to the first floor. He was taken to a hospital for treatment. A group of several dozen young people caused chaos in Minneapolis last night. The Star Tribune reports they ran through an area between Loring Park and Nicollet Mall and damaged property. A police spokesman says it took about an hour to disperse the group, and there were some arrests. A motive for the ruckus is unclear, and there were no serious injuries. In sports news, pro hockey is making headlines even though it's summer. The NHL held its draft over the weekend, and the free agent market breaks open tomorrow. The Minnesota Wild are reportedly targeting a former University of Minnesota Gopher star. Kathy Werzer talked puck with Howard Sinker, a digital sports editor of the Star Tribune.
Now, the former Gopher star we're talking about is forward Thomas Vanek. What's the latest on that?
Well, he met with Wild coach Mike Yeo last night. The Wild, if you would sort of give them a number one need right now, it would be to add another goal scorer. And Vanek, who played at the University of Minnesota, is really an interesting target. He was traded twice last season. He was traded to Buffalo, and then he was traded to Montreal. And twice he turned down longer-term contract extensions. And the Wild are wondering whether he would take a shorter deal in order to play in Minnesota. I guess it's what you would call a hometown discount.
Well, he lives in Stillwater, right?
Correct. It's an interesting situation because the Wild are wondering how he would fit in their overall game. Everybody knows he's a goal scorer. They're wondering how he would fit in terms of team chemistry and in terms of the defensive expectations that the team would have for him.
Mm-hmm. Who else are the Wild reportedly pursuing?
Well, again, there are some high-profile names. There's Jerome McGinley, the former Calgary legend who scored 30 goals last season for Boston. He's really a future NHL Hall of Famer. And again, what he would bring to the team in addition to goal scoring, I mean, this is a guy who scored 30 or more goals every season in the NHL except for one. He would bring some leadership at age 37. And then when you're looking at improving the defense, the team is looking at Matt Niskanen, a defenseman who's played for Pittsburgh. He played for a couple seasons at Minnesota Duluth when he was in college and had a really good year last year. The issue with Niskanen, though, is whether or not the Wild would give him the long-term contract that he's supposedly seeking.
Interesting stuff. I mean, it would appear that the higher priority for the Wild would be someone who can score, and that would be Vanek.
Correct. But there really are. There are other things they need to do. The team needs to be better on defense, and they've got to figure out the goalkeeping situation. That's something that I don't know that they do through free agency, but between Darcy Kemper and Backstrom and Josh Harding, all of them have had injury and physical problems, and I think what the Wild is thinking that if they need to find a goalie, at some point they would be able to find something through trade or somebody who just can't get work somewhere else.
Now, the Wild participated in the NHL draft. Could any of these players that we drafted make some kind of an impact fairly quickly?
No, they're really not going to make an impact quickly. I think the big name we'd be talking about is Alex Tuch. He was the first-round draft choice. He played for the U.S. National Under-18 team last season. Hockey is more like baseball in that there's some development that needs to be done typically in the minor leagues as opposed to pro basketball or pro football where guys come in and make an impact right away.
All right. Sounds interesting. Thanks for joining us.
Take care.
Star Tribune digital sports editor Howard Sinker. He talked with Kathy Werzer on Morning Edition. I'm Phil Picardi. I'll have the Tuesday news right back here tomorrow.